Good morning, everyone. Saturday, June 13th, and here's the news as reported by our staff correspondents at home and overseas. We turn first to Britain, where John McVane is ready to report. Go ahead, London.
This is London. Military quarters in London today believe Rommel is aiming at Tobruk as the fighting becomes fiercer in the Libyan desert. It's thought here the Germans are trying to do what they started to do on the first day of the battle, advance to El Adem and strike north. Military information in London is that the British positions are intact and the positions at Knightsbridge and Gazala are still held. London today had the official report that severe fighting lasted all day yesterday south of El Adem. The enemy attacks on El Adem were repulsed, but Axis armored forces maneuvered around the point and struck at Akroma. British armored forces engaged them heavily and inflicted considerable damage. A couple of hours ago, it was announced here that thousands more American troops have arrived in Northern Ireland. They came with armored fighting vehicles and mechanized artillery. The combat troops are armed with Tommy guns and other automatic weapons. The convoy made the crossing without the loss of one American. The units are reported to have worn the new type of American steel helmet. Troops were whisked away to their camps by the smooth-running transport organization as soon as they landed. Today, the wartime derby was run at Newmarket. The big race is just finished. The favorite, the big game, owned by the king, was an also-ran. The winner was Watling Street, owned by Lord Derby. Yesterday, the King's filly, Sun Chariot, won another famous English race, the Oaks. People who watched yesterday's race were counted in hundreds instead of the peacetime thousands. Only one train left London for Newmarket, and hundreds of people had to stay behind on the station platform. A few people hired London taxis to make the trip at a price of about $40 for the 140-mile round trip. Tomorrow, every city and town in Britain is taking part in the Flag Day celebrations of the United Nations. London is to have a big procession of men and women representing Britain at war. Marches will include factory workers, fishermen, Welsh miners, farmers, all the services and the Home Guard. At most of the celebrations, a proclamation from Mr. Churchill will be read. American troops are going to attend the church service in London. And at St. Martin's in the Field, a famous church near Trafalgar Square, Ambassador Wynant will read the lesson. President Roosevelt's speech is being broadcast by the BBC. News of the heavy losses inflicted on the Japanese fleet got most of the headlines in London this morning. But some interesting sidelights on the Anglo-Russian pact and Mr. Molotov's trip are still appearing. The fact that at least up to this morning, the German press and radio had mentioned the pact to the German people in only one discreet statement is a pretty good indication of how surprised the Nazis were at the news. You can imagine the hurried conferences between Dr. Goebbels and other Nazi leaders as they tried to solve the problem of how to break it gently to the Germans. One regular German radio political commentary was canceled yesterday. Instead, an announcer said to German listeners, "Achtung, we shall play you music instead." The Germans haven't yet made any mention of the Second Front statements in Washington and London. Germans in Norway, however, got the assurance from their country's radio that the Anglo-Russian pact would never have any practical significance. They were told the pact came at a time when the Axis were preparing military operations which will lead to what they called a final result. The Russian air crew who flew the big Russian bomber that brought Molotov made a fine impression on the RAF men they met. As soon as the bomber landed, the crew got out and went to work servicing the machine. They explained that in the Russian Air Force, each flying crew, as soon as they land, get the craft ready for action at a moment's notice. Both the bomber and the men's equipment are said to have been first class by the men who saw them. The Russians were made members of the Society of Short Snorters, restricted to people who have flown the Atlantic or are about to do so. They were given signed dollar bills as badges of membership, and a British flyer explained that they must always show the bill at another member's challenge or pay a fine. The Russians are reported to have been brought from their beds by a fake message, but every man had his dollar bill with him. This is John McVane in London, returning you to New York.
And now, in just a moment, we will take you to neutral Sweden for a report of David Anderson. We turn across the Atlantic again as we take you to Stockholm.
Hello, New York. This is David Anderson speaking from Stockholm. It may be significant that just 2 days after the signing of the pact between London and Moscow, the Finnish communique today merely states that there is nothing to report on land, sea, or in the air. You will recall the recent German and Russian announcements of attacks on the Leningrad front, in which Finnish troops were reported to be involved, and the German announcement several days ago of a combined German-Finnish drive in the region of Murmansk. From the Finnish communique today, are we to assume that these separate drives were of little significance? Well-informed sources here in Stockholm believe that we can. They point out that the late ice in the northern region prevented the Germans from sending in their supplies until very late. In fact, their supply situation as yet is far from being satisfactory. These sources go on to say that it is very doubtful if he will witness any major operations on the Leningrad front before late summer. Meanwhile, I learned that further German reinforcements have been sent into the Norwegian port of Trondheim. It is still uncertain whether these troops are meant to reinforce the Germans in Norway or if they are to be sent on to the northern front. From the rest of the eastern front, only sparse reports are available today. The Germans still seem to maintain the reserve in speaking of their offensive on the Kharkov front. However, they do admit that Tymoshenko still has large forces at his disposal, and that any German advance in this sector will come only after hard fighting. They now seem to exclude the possibility of any quick advances, such as they registered in the first phases of the Russian campaign. It is generally believed here that Hitler will not venture any large-scale operations into the Caucasus before he has taken Sevastopol and liquidated large portions of Tymoshenko's army. That, even according to German admissions, will take time, one of the most important features in the whole of the Eastern campaign. This is David Anderson, returning you now to New York.
From our New York newsroom, 43 years ago, General Douglas MacArthur entered West Point. His countrymen are celebrating that anniversary today to show their appreciation for the magnificent job the general has done in his campaign against the Japanese. At his headquarters in Australia, he has asked his fellow Americans to rededicate themselves today to duty, honor, and country. He has asked them to say a simple, silent prayer that the merciful God may guide our steps. Prime Minister John Curtin and other Australian leaders have offered the Allied Commander-in-Chief in the Southwest Pacific high tribute. In a broadcast last night, Curtin recalled that General MacArthur has said he will one day return to the Philippines. And the Prime Minister said the General's word was a solemn pledge Australians are going to help him keep. From Moscow, Russian troops are counterattacking on both important sectors of the Eastern Front. But the damage to the invading Nazi troops has been greater at Sevastopol than at Kharkov. The Soviet Information Bureau says heavy toll has been levied on German manpower and materiel in the battle in the Crimean port. 62 German tanks have been knocked out and damaged, and 10 artillery and mortar batteries have been leveled. The nine-day-old battle also has meant death for three regiments of German infantry and a squadron of cavalry, representing from 3,500 to 7,000 men. Meanwhile, Marshal Semyon Tymoshenko has turned the 48-hour Kharkov defensive into something of a Russian advance, although the upper hand is not claimed yet by the Red Army in the Ukraine sector either. Events here at home are reported by Earl Godwin, speaking from the newsroom in Washington.
And good morning, folks. Everyone here in the government, that is, in the military and naval and in the commentating business, is wondering about that Japanese landing on the very tip end of those stepping stones called the Aleutian Islands. I may be wrong, it's easily ascertained, but they tell me there are 1,400 or more of those islands, some vast ones, some just little points of rocks that stick up there in that cold green sea, gray sea, sometimes full of fog and moss and very few people. The Japanese vessels have been reported now in Kiska Harbor, which is 80 miles away from Attu Island, which is the very tip end of the Aleutians. Our Navy thinks the invaders have been forced out of all populated areas. Of course, there's not very much population there anyhow. Naval authorities and the rest of us have really been expecting the Japanese to land somewhere up in that maze of islands because they're protected by fog and everything else. You can't keep them out all the time. Ever since the Jap airmen raided Dutch Harbor on June 3rd, we've expected they'd try it again. Now, the Japs have set foot in the Western Hemisphere for the first time, but the invasion is not on a very large scale, just a tiny rock and some Japs have climbed up on it. Navy men believe that this Japanese adventure may be a face-saving gesture more than anything else, so that yammering Yamamoto, the Jap admiral, can tell his people that he's landed on the North American continent. The island of Attu has a little radio station and a very small native village, and that's about all. We consider it has very little of military value at all. But from the way the Army and the Navy have been battering Yamamoto's forces, it appears that to some folks that the Japanese offensive power in the Pacific has been really crippled. The Jap lines of communication have been spoiled considerably. Now, see what occurred. The Japs got a tremendous licking at the Coral Sea fight, the details of which have just been given out by the Navy, and rather conservatively of that. That Coral Sea fight hurt the Japs so badly that they thought they had run into practically all of our forces. They didn't see how just a little force could do them up as badly as it did, so they got the wrong impression that we had left Hawaii unprotected. So they tried to sneak around and tried to come down on Hawaii like the wolf on the fold, and they got caught without mercy at Midway. Now you see the connection between those two fights. Now, if the Japanese had seized Midway Island, it would have been a powerful base against Pearl Harbor, where we might expect another invasion. That would put the Hawaiians in the Jap hands, and we could have expected a West Coast invasion or an attempt by Jap forces sooner or later based on Hawaii. So that seems to be all off, and that shows the American people what the Navy has been up to. Japan's humiliated Admiral Yamamoto saw 51 of his vessels lost or knocked out, all by American air power. Japan has lost half of her fleet's aviation arm. That is, we've knocked out 4 and possibly 5 airplane carriers. One of the Lexington survivors tells this story. He says he was standing by a Seaman gunner feeding shells into the anti-aircraft gun. When the first torpedo struck the old Lexington, another crew member asked him, "What was that, a torpedo?" "Nah," said the gunner, "we probably hit a reef." Just then, wham, another torpedo struck, and the second seaman looked up. Dryly he drawled out, "Make that a big reef." You know, that's the American for you. You can't beat him, and I think by now the Japanese know it and are considerably worried. Probably you know by now, if you don't, it's been bulletinized that that another unit of American troops, including Negro troops, have landed in Northern Ireland, and there's a great time going on over there. They're going to make it a part of Flag Day all around the world. Closer to home, the things that will affect every one of us have to do with the great big rubber drive, the nationwide rubber drive that the president has inaugurated. It's the all-firedest, biggest nationwide hunt you ever saw. The president commands us all to search high and low for every bit of scrap rubber that the nation is hiding, from bathing caps to tires, hot water bottles, sink stoppers, rubber heels, raincoats, everything that's got any kind of rubber in it anywhere, and turn them into the filling stations of the country beginning at 1 minute past midnight tomorrow. That's Monday morning, when Monday morning is a minute old. Started, and the treasure hunt will run for 2 weeks. You know how you really have no idea how important it is or how badly your country needs that rubber. The way these army fellows talk, actually, we may lose or win a major battle on the amount of rubber we collect, because rubber puts speed into the mobile army. It puts 25 more speed in the American tanks than the Germans have with their lack of rubber. And one of the things that was lost in the shuffle yesterday was the inaugurating of what we shall call the V-mail, V for victory. That's a post office service for getting more mail across the seas for the boys overseas. It is a micro photographic scheme. Your letter taken to a post office is photographed and reduced in size so that much more mail can be sent abroad than ordinarily. Just now, 20 large post offices are equipped with this micro-photographic device. It's planned to put the whole service into the whole 44,000 post offices, and that's all from Washington at this time.
These have been reports by John McVain from London, David Anderson from Stockholm, and Earl Godwin from Washington. For the latest news, keep tuned to this station. This is the National Broadcasting Company.